Canada. The sheer size of Canada is overwhelming. Smaller only than the former Soviet Union, it sprawls from the rolling crests of the Pacific to the crashing breakers of the Atlantic. Its northern boundary is the frozen Arctic, and its southern, the American border. Canada is a land of infinite variety, of majestic stands of cedar and fir and shady groves of maple and poplar. Of the towering peaks of the Rockies and rounded ancient granite of the Canadian Shield, of the lush ranch land and seemingly endless rolling prairie, of rivers that reach thousands of miles inland, and of possibly more lakes than the rest of the world combined, of quiet sandy beaches and coasts where the mountains plunge into the sea. It is a land of small towns, logging camps and mining settlements, and of fishing outposts. It is a land of cities, the breathtaking beauty of Vancouver, the soaring skyscrapers of commercial Toronto, the French flair of Montreal, the old fortress of Quebec overlooking the St. Lawrence, the port of Halifax, whose ancient guns still frown menacingly over the harbor. Not one has seen it all. Few can imagine its vastness and its variety. The four Atlantic provinces are the northernmost extension of the Appalachian Mountains, which run along most of the Atlantic seaboard of North America. The Atlantic provinces have been little affected by modern immigration. Most of the inhabitants are descendants of people from the British Isles and have lived in the region for generations or centuries. Poorer than the average Canadian, the people of the Atlantic provinces have a strong sense of independence, a distinctive outlook rooted in their past, and a sense of identity as Maritimers, those who live by the sea. United by geography, but divided by history and language, the provinces of Quebec and Ontario form two distinctive Canadian regions and societies. For almost 400 years, Quebec farmers have cultivated narrow strips of land running back from the St. Lawrence. Most of the people in Quebec are French-speaking, while most of them now live in the industrial cities which produced almost one-third of Canada's manufacturers. The quiet villages and farms and the white towers of the Parche Church constantly reveal what the province was like for several centuries, and what for some it still is. Ontario is Canada's most populous province. Over the border in Ontario, the floor of the St. Lawrence Valley broadens. The farms become larger, and settlements run many miles north from the river. Prosperous farmers and dairymen and fruit growers in the Niagara Peninsula produce one-third of the nation's agricultural wealth. In the bleak wilderness of the Shield, a string of towns and cities live off the rich yield of the forests and mines. But the pulse of the provinces comes from the large manufacturing cities that sweep around Lake Ontario, from the Niagara Falls to Oshawa. The southwestern portion of the Canadian Shield gradually disappears into the wetlands of the Canadian prairies, one of the great granaries of the world. Beyond the Rockies lies British Columbia, a province extremely rich in the products of its forests, waters, and mines, with an abundance of hydroelectric power, much of it exported to the United States. It boasts of a rapidly growing manufacturing industry bases on its raw material. Stretching across the top of the four western provinces are the Great Northwest Territories and the Yukon, governed partly from Ottawa, but hoping eventually to become provinces. The North makes up 40% of Canada's area. Yet, in that vast Arctic region, there are only 70,000 people. Many of them are Inuit and Indian, although increasing numbers of newcomers now live in the North as prospectors, engineers, oilmen, merchants, government officials, and operators of radar lines and air bases that guard the northern approaches to the continent. For a long time, the distant North was far removed from the mainstream of Canadian life. But the discovery of large mineral deposits and oil and gas fields, and the existence of powerful rivers for hydroelectric power, have made Canadian look to the north. Less than half of the population of Canada is of British stock. Of those, are many immigrated from British and the United States in colonial days. Others arrived among the flood of immigrants in the first decade of the 20th century, and in the years since the end of the Second World War. They are scattered all over the country, but form the bulk of the population in the Atlantic provinces, the rural Ontario, and parts of the prairies and British Columbia. About 25% of Canada's population is French-speaking. There has been little modern immigration from France. Quebec is the heartland of French Canada, but large numbers of French Canadians live in New Brunswick and Ontario. One quarter of the population is of neither French nor British origin. Most of these Canadians have come from the countries of Europe, seeking escape from tyranny, war, or poverty. They came to break the virgin soil of the Canadian West, run the rapid expanding factories in the East, or develop the mineral and forest resources of the northern frontier. Then came the massive post-war immigration. There were 5 million immigrants between 1945 and 1983, and most of them headed for the cities of Eastern Canada or British Columbia, where the skilled found their place in the booming industries and expanding classrooms and offices, and the unskilled became the labor force of the post-war construction boom. Canada has also been a haven for refugees. Over 80,000 Vietnamese boat people went there. The immigrants have brought to Canada their own cultural heritage, as well as the brains and muscle that Canada has needed. Art galleries and concert hall, fashionable shops and general stores, hockey rinks and football field, university facilities and high school classrooms, foreign language movie houses and bookstores, markets and restaurants, all reflect the Canadian cultural mosaic.